Mace Finnegan and Donick 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you. Guys, I have a very important question for you. It is a question that has never been uttered on sports talk radio.
What's that?
Really?
Are you ready for some football?
Are you ready for some football? It's Thursday night party.
I kid, of course. That has been uttered on sports talk radio
every day.
Millions of times.
Okay.
But it is true. We do have football tonight. Real football. Cowboys at Eagles. And it's going to be a rude awakening for my parents. As I was telling the two of you before the show, my parents are headed to the Northeast for a trip, and they decided, unbeknownst to them, to make a pit stop for the night in Philadelphia.
But your dad's a sports guy,
he
right?
He is, and it didn't dawn on me until late morning or so, and I said to my dad, you do realize that tonight is the Eagles' home opener, right? And he said, no idea.
Wow.
And I said, watch out for some crazy people.
Crazy is an understatement.
If you saw
but love
Silver Linings
fans.
Playbook, you know those Eagle fans.
Listen, I have a bone to pick with. My daughter.
Okay.
And my ex-wife.
Okay.
Both of them I got a bone. But really, it's really my ex-wife, but it's my daughter too, because she won't tell me how to get it off the car. So I had to drop them off at the airport today in... My ex-wife left her car behind because she didn't want to have it in New York. So my car's in the shop. My truck's in the shop, so I drive hers. Throw the luggage in the back of the car. So as I'm driving, I'm just cruising along, and it drifts a little bit. And the car jerks back over to the right, and it startled me. I'm like, what's going on here? And they're just laughing. Like, yeah, it's the lane assistance. Mercedes-Benz, take that damn thing off your car, okay, man? You don't need that. If somebody's drifting over, just make a sound. Don't jerk the car all the way back to the right. And they're laughing at me. And I said, how do you take it off? And they said, well, we're not going to tell you how to take it off. I'm like, seriously? So y'all, your car is at my house. And you're not going to tell me how to take this crazy thing off before I have an accident? And they just laughed at me. And they said, wait till you get up to somebody close and the brakes just hit. Watch that. And I'm like... Well, tell me how to take this stuff off. That is just completely wrong. So I'm a little ticked off at my daughter and my ex-wife, Marcy. I'm kind of ticked off at both of them.
They're still laughing right now.
And they're still laughing right now. I'm like, I almost had an accident, and they laughed. It's like, well, you shouldn't be drifting
modern
over.
Modern technology. Exactly. It's all about safety, D-Mace.
Exactly. I know, but man, don't jerk me over into an accident. It's like, don't make sense. But, yeah, that's just, I had to get it off my chest.
Do you feel better?
Yes, I feel a lot better.
Okay.
But I feel even much better knowing that your dad, who is a sports guy.
He is.
Chose to stop in Philadelphia of all places. Why not Pittsburgh? You know?
Well, alternate routes to get around
Pittsburgh.
The city?
Pittsburgh would be out of the
way.
Yeah,
it'd be a little out of the way, yeah.
For where they're going.
Okay.
But we'll see what happens.
There's got to be a throughway or some back exactly. roads where the movie Witness was filmed where you can go through and there's not as much traffic.
Go stay in Happy Valley. I don't know. That's probably in the middle of both Pittsburgh and Philly, right?
I'll be interested in what my mother says. My mother is not a sports fan, of course. She's married to a sports fan. She gave birth to a big sports fan. But I will be interested to see if she has any interesting stories about her evening in Philadelphia when the Eagles host the Cowboys tonight.
Normal Thursday night.
Yes, normal Thursday night. Eagles, by the way, favored by 7.5 against the Cowboys tonight on Thursday night football.
What do we think about that? I feel like the Cowboys are going to hang.
I think the Cowboys are going to beat them. I think they're going to beat Philly.
By the way,
I don't think they're going to beat them, but I like the Cowboys in the points.
By the way, the line has moved on the Titans game again. It's back to Denver -8.5.
Whew.
So the Cowboys were the biggest underdog of the week. The Titans are once again the biggest underdog of the week at 8.5.
Now you
Sunday
have
afternoon.
A ticket to the bank on this tonight, do you not?
I do. I did predict that the Eagles would defeat the Cowboys by double digits.
So double digits?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm
now when you did this, yeah, it was after the trade. Yeah,
yes,
you
it was after the Micah Parsons trade. So I thought the Cowboys were going to go out there and stink up the joint, and they still could. The game's not for 4 hours. So
Dallas
we'll
is going to win. I predict Dallas is going to win.
I feel like the hangover could be there.
Hangover from what?
For the Eagles.
Oh, for the Eagles. Super Bowl hangover. That's a long
they started
hangover.
Slow last year. They, you know, they lost some depth on D. Mm-hmm. I think the Cowboys have, you know, everybody's been telling them they stink, and now you've traded your best player, you got no chance. I think the Cowboys are going to compete tonight. They're going to be right there.
That's the Willie I know right there.
I like the points.
One quick Titans note. Dan Moore Jr., who was on the injury report yesterday, did not practice with an ankle injury. Says he's good to go for Sunday against the Broncos.
Did but he the practice line, why, the whole
so
practice
why do we
today?
Think the line moved like that?
That's a good question.
To get those suckers in to bet.
Not enough people betting on the Titans.
Exactly,
we're gonna bump
probably.
It up.
Yeah. We're going to bump it up just because nothing's changed. Oh, Isle Manor is the starter. Probably that's why. The bump went up.
Like, I've never heard of this guy. How do you pronounce his name?
Dan Moore did practice today.
Okay, good.
He did practice.
Dan Moore
yes.
did practice. So they heard that and said, we're going to up it another point.
Yeah. What about our buddies?
LJ.
Mr. Sneed.
Yeah. Did he practice today?
Did he practice?
I'll have to look. Mm-hmm. I will find that out. The injury report will be out at some point during our program.
Denard Wilson, I really enjoy his press conference. He gives good answers. He doesn't mess around. He answers questions. But he also has some fun terms. Like when he doesn't want to give you, they're like, how much is Jerry Snead going to play and how much is Winston going to play? He goes, you'll find out Sunday when we deploy.
So that's a new word?
Yeah, deploy. He says, when we deploy, you'll find out. I like that.
Gator Tim on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, I'm with D-Mace. I always turn off the lane assist in rental cars.
Yeah, I don't have it on my car. It's just it's too much. Robbie Stanley texted me, said, yeah, I know about that brake assistant. Because he said he had one on a rental car. And he said, man, it scared him. I'm just going to leave it at that. It said it scared him. Almost, you know, made him, you know, hey, almost. But, yeah, take that thing off your car, man. Take it off. You don't need it.
So the Titans are 8.5-point underdogs against the Broncos, according to ESPN Bet. And here's how we are going to start today's show. Because we all know what we're going to be watching, or more specifically, who we are going to be watching on Sunday afternoon. It's Cam Ward. So this is the question we are going to start today's show with. We want you involved on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com at 615-737-1025. What would we all consider a successful NFL debut for Cam Ward? And here's what I like about this question. You can answer it in many different ways. You can look at the tangibles. You know me. I like numbers. I've got a lot of data here in front of me. So I may decide that a successful NFL debut for Cam Ward depends on meeting certain criteria. Completion percentage. Big time throws. Turnover worthy plays. Etc. Etc. But you can also answer it by looking at the intangibles. The feel. The vibe that Cam Ward emits. You want him to have command of the huddle. You want him to look like he's not overwhelmed by the moment. So there are a lot of different ways we can answer this question. And I will get to the data because I did some number crunching last night and today. But here is what I want you all to do at 615-737-1025. Tell me what you would consider a successful NFL debut for Cam Ward. You can give me a statistical answer. You can give me an intangible answer, but I'm curious to hear what you all would consider a successful debut for Cam Ward on Sunday. So, Willie, I will toss that question across the table to you. When you are watching Cam Ward on Sunday, that game is over. And look, history suggests the Titans are going to lose and lose big, and I will share those numbers shortly. But when that game is over and you think to yourself, did Cam Ward have a good day today? What are going to be your markers for that?
I think considering where the game is and the defense they're playing, I will use a term that was thrown out in the press conferences. Yeah, I heard Brian Callahan, both coordinators, they all talked, or all three coordinators, including Fossil. And what they said was, stay within yourself. And this was Callahan and Holtz, the offensive coordinator, both echoed that. So I am looking for him not to bite at some of the traps that will be set for him. They're going to test him out. They're going to see if he will fall for the traps. I would even take one turnover. The numbers overall, I think my theme all year is I'm not going to be too into the numbers. They will mean something. Not going to ignore them, but I'm more about the eye test and the feel. But I would take one turnover, and I would say is the overall feeling that he stayed within himself and did a good job of understanding as much as he possibly could for his first game.
Derek?
Oh, man. The numbers, if he has the numbers, that'd be great. I think the numbers are the icing on the cake, if those numbers come the right way. Because we know numbers can, you know, at times fool you if you're not watching the game. A guy can throw, you know, for 300 yards, but more than half of that was in the second half when they were down three touchdowns. And you didn't see the game, but all you saw was the stats. For a young quarterback, and just like Joe, I want to see, which I'm not going to be able to see at first, I would love to see his demeanor in the locker room. I would love to see his demeanor, you know, on the field when he's warming up. How he comes back out once the team comes out. Those things mean a lot. Is he locked in? Is he focused? Is he doing something out of the ordinary? Because you don't want your quarterback doing something out of the ordinary. Stick with what you've been doing and let's go. Then once you get in the game, because that first drive, those first two drives are going to be critical. They are. They're going to be critical for the offensive coordinator as well as for the quarterback. I want to see how well those two guys are mentally locked in. Because I think if Callahan and Cam are locked in together, I think you will see it out on the field. I don't think you will see the nervousness. And I know this is a different level. I don't want to see out of him what I saw out of Arch Manning. And I think Arch was going to be a damn good quarterback. But that's not what I want to see. I want to see someone that has been in this situation, not necessarily on this level, but that have been where he had to come out and make a statement. You know, that's the type of Cam that I want to see. That he's not going to take chances, but he's going to do what he needs to do to win the football game. But that goes along with how Callahan calls the game. Those two guys, most importantly, they need to be locked in. And his demeanor and his – because he's been calm, it seems like, in preseason. But for whatever reason, when that light flicks on and the regular season starts, man, it seems like those that wilt, they wilt very quickly. And those that are made for it, you see it right away.
I think that is a great answer.
That's what I want to see from Cam. The numbers are going to be what they are.
And because, I have those. Because I have some numbers.
I think to your point, D-Mace, we found out quick that Will Levis went the wrong way.
Exactly.
In that intangible. Because you're right. I think you want to see how he reacts to the adversity when it hits. And it's going to hit. And that article we dove into head first yesterday and had a lot of great discussion on, and our listeners were great with that too. I think it illustrates that part of it is there's so much to learn and process for somebody at that level making the transition. I don't care how prepared you are. You're going to go into the fire and you're going to experience it. When Will Levis went into the fire, he melted. He could not get through it. And Ward is going to go into that fire, but how does he handle it? I think we have a sense that he's going to do a better job. I think he looks like he's got what it takes to get through that, and he doesn't have a lot of help around him, so it is going to be tough. But that is a key question.
I'm reminded of 1 year ago, because remember, the Tennessee Titans opened the season last year at Chicago for the NFL debut of the number one overall pick at quarterback, Caleb Williams. And the Bears won that game. But remember how Caleb Williams performed in that game. He completed 14 of 29 passes for 93 yards. Mm-hmm. did not throw a touchdown or an interception, fumbled once, and was sacked twice. According to ESPN, Caleb Williams was off target on 31% of his throws in that game and averaged 3.2 yards per pass attempt. I can't imagine if the Titans pull off an upset against the Denver Broncos and Cam Ward has a game like Caleb Williams did against the Titans last year, that Titans fans are going to be giddy about Cam Ward. Yes, they win the game in this scenario, but that just goes to show you, to your point, and I acknowledge this even as someone who loves numbers, that numbers are not the end-all be-all because the Bears won the game. And I don't remember what the reaction was in Chicago the next day, but Caleb Williams did not put on a show against the Tennessee Titans. Will Levis bailed out Caleb Williams in that game. Caleb Williams did not play like a winner in that game against the Titans 1 year ago. So I just want you all to keep that in mind. Also, since 2000, quarterbacks drafted number one overall who started week one the year they were drafted are 2-8-1. Here are the quarterbacks. Caleb Williams, Bryce Young, Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, Jameis Winston, Andrew Luck, Cam Newton, Sam Bradford, Matthew Stafford, and David Carr. David Carr and Caleb Williams won. Kyler Murray tied. The rest lost. So 2-8-1. Nick Suss of the Tennessean pointed this out today. In the entire history of the NFL, only one quarterback picked number one overall has ever started and won on the road in week one of his rookie season. Coincidentally, it was John Elway. So,
but look at his stats for that game. If I remember it correctly, he was not good.
I will have to look.
I will pull it out.
Okay. Some other numbers, quickly. Also
keep in mind, John Elway was the first pick in the draft, but the Broncos were not the worst team in the league because there was a draft day trade, a famous one with the Colts. So he wasn't on a bad team like most, if not the rest, of the first overall picks, right? That's part of being the first overall pick. You're coming in on the team that was the worst in the league.
Those 11 quarterbacks since 2000 in those NFL debuts had a combined completion percentage of 53.8%, averaged 237.8 passing yards. They threw for 14 total touchdowns, 20 total interceptions, an average rating of 63.9. So, not sparkling numbers.
Here's John Elway's line from the 14-10 win in his NFL debut in 1983 against Pittsburgh. 1-for-8 for 14 yards, one interception. Sacked four times. So that's winning football right there, John Elway. He actually got benched,
again,
I think, in that game.
Caleb Williams last year, you all saw it because the Bears played the Titans. Caleb Williams did not look great in that game. And again, I don't remember the reaction in Chicago, but I can't imagine that Titans fans, let's just say Cam Ward has all of the same stats on Sunday that Caleb Williams did last year against the Titans. I don't think people are going to be calling in or texting us on Monday saying, man, Cam Ward looked great out there. I feel really good about it. But 615-737-1025, this is the question we are starting today's program with. What would you consider a successful NFL debut for Cam Ward? Is it tangible? Stats? Win? A win in Denver? Is it intangible? The feel, the vibe that you get from Cam Ward, win or lose? 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tune in for the NFL Game of the Week on ESPN 1025 The Game as the Dallas Cowboys take on the Philadelphia Eagles tonight at 7:20 p.m. The NFL Game of the Week is presented by Circus Sportsbook Kentucky and Massaro in 12 South. This Saturday, MTSU will take on Wisconsin. The kickoff is at 3 p.m., and you can catch all of the action on Totally Hits 93.3. Coverage is also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at totallyhitsnashville.com. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Our question for you at 615-737-1025. What would you consider a successful NFL debut for Cam Ward? Let's get to your reaction on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And this is what I like about this question. There are some responses that are tangible, statistical, and some are intangible. One texter says, he's got to look like he belongs. Another texter says a successful debut for Cam would be a win or a competitive game with one or fewer turnovers. Another texter says, I hate to say it, but wins and losses are quarterback stats. A successful debut for Cam is winning the game. I remind you, since 2000, quarterbacks drafted number one overall who started week one the year they were drafted are 2-8-1. The score differential in those 11 games, minus 94 for the team with the number one overall pick at quarterback. 210 to 304. That's an average of 27.6 points allowed to 19.1 points scored. So if that's that texter's barometer for a successful debut, that texter is probably going to be disappointed. Steven.
I think that's why it's important to have these discussions, to try to be realistic about the expectations.
Steven says Cam Ward gets an A if he completes 60% of his passes for 200-plus yards and commits no turnovers. Well, no desperate Hail Mary-ish turnovers. I just went back and looked because I was curious. Caleb Williams committed two turnover-worthy plays via Pro Football Focus against the Titans in week one last season. Bryce Young, in his NFL debut a couple of years ago, also committed two turnover-worthy plays. That's as far as I got before we came back from break. Mm-hmm. So I may be willing to give Cam Ward at least two turnover-worthy plays against the Broncos.
Because you may be willing.
I may be willing.
Professor Adam Vingan.
I may be willing. Yes, I may be willing. Because the Broncos, they blitzed like crazy. The Broncos blitzed on 37.3% of opposing dropbacks last season, the fourth highest rate in the NFL, according to Next Gen Stats. So you know, is it Vance Joseph? Is he the defensive coordinator?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In Denver, he is going to be sending everybody as often as he can at Cam Ward. And that goes back to sort of the vibe, right? How does Cam Ward handle that adversity, for lack of a better word? Let's get to more.
I think we would be thrilled if he only had two turnover-worthy plays. Yeah. That's not throws. That's throws plus possible fumbles, right? So let's again provide added perspective. Mm-hmm. Would you take the career of Peyton Manning? You already know the answer, right? Peyton Manning's first game, 21 for 37, one touchdown, three interceptions, and a quarterback rating of 58.6. They lost 24-15. Troy Aikman lost 28-0, 17 for 35, 180 yards, two interceptions, one fumble. And we just got done talking about John Elway. These are three Hall of Fame guys. You cannot worry too much about what happens in the first game. John Elway was 1 for 8 for 14 yards, interception, four sacks. He got benched in the game. So I think Cam Ward is gonna bring something to the table, but I cannot be surprised if he struggles based on where the team is. Remember, we're talking about guys who were the first pick in the draft, and you inherit the worst team in football.
By the way, a turnover-worthy play, according to Pro Football Focus, includes fumbles in the pocket, throws that are interceptable, and interceptions. Not all interceptions are turnover-worthy plays. Think about a perfect pass that bounces off a receiver's hands and into the arms of a defender. And not all turnover-worthy plays are interceptions. Think about the same pass off a defender's hand. So just to give you some context.
To a offensive coordinator, it's not about stats. Because if it's about stats, the offensive coordinator, I feel, can design things to get some numbers. And if you want to do that, you throw the ball 80% of the time, you eventually get the numbers. It's about how does he move our offense? What is he doing to make our offense better? Is he lifting up the guys around him? Does he have command of the huddle? Does he have command when the guys go to the line of scrimmage? Is he seeing what the center's seeing? Are those two guys in sync? You know, that's what matters. Is he throwing the ball in the right area? It may not always be a completion, you know, but is he throwing the ball? Is he reading the defense the way I see it? because ultimately that's what you want. Your offensive coordinator and your quarterback seeing the same things out there on the field. That's why he calls particular plays, because he's assuming, or he's anticipating the defense playing this on this down and distance. So if you see it like I see it and we're moving the ball, we don't have to go, you know, 8 for 8 on, we have 8 drives. It'd be great to score 8 touchdowns, yes. But we know realistically, if you have 8 drives in a game, you may score on 3 of them. 3 to 4 drives if you have 8. So in those 3 to 4 drives, how do we look as a team? Yeah, they get paid just like we do. They're gonna call a play that is going to stop us. But you as a quarterback, are you seeing the game the same way I am giving it to you? Meaning the plays that I'm calling against that defense, do you see it? It may not be the right play, but do you see it, and are you not throwing it anyway? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, I call slants, and they play a coverage that takes away our slants. Are you still going to try to throw it there? Or are you going to dirty? Or are you going to throw it away? Which one are you doing? That's what I want to see as a coordinator.
Tommy says, I think it's a success if he shows he knows what he's doing, protects the ball, and keeps his poise. I don't care about having to win. It's a team sport. A couple of texters say, don't get injured. That's the only bar they want to clear. Don't get injured, Cam Ward.
Well, that would have more to do with, is the line
right
what we hope it will be?
Yeah.
And that is a professional line that looks like it's getting some return on the investment that's been made on that with the offensive line coach, mm-hmm. 2 first-round picks, and a lot of free agent money. That needs to equate to giving Cam Ward a chance. That's a big, big question. But that's a team stat. So keeping Cam Ward upright has only a little bit to do with Cam Ward himself.
Dylan in Antioch says, let's not get too caught up on the first game. Remember Marcus Mariota's first game? Not to mention Will Levis's first game? Hey, it may not be the worst thing in the world if Cam Ward has a quote-unquote bad game on Sunday, considering what happened with Will Levis and Marcus Mariota.
This is true.
Yes.
Well, and the uniqueness of Marcus Mariota's first game was he was playing the
Jameis
guy that
Winston.
Was the first pick in the draft. And Jameis Winston I don't think he had a great game that game. But that was a really interesting matchup that year to have those two guys, the first 2 picks, head-to-head in the first game. And, of course, Levis wasn't on opening day.
Mm-mm. After week six, seven?
That's why I think the distinction of the when we're slicing it down to first pick in the draft – in game one the next year, that is probably the toughest set of circumstances you can put a guy in. Mm-hmm. A bad roster that can't be fixed in a year, and inexperience going in on day one.
Dustin in Hopkinsville says, I want them almost to be competitive and be right there at the end but come up short. That would be a shot in the arm. I just don't want this young quarterback to get way too confident, then humbled hard. Just be competitive. As a longtime Titans fan, a win on Sunday would do nothing for me. I know better with my Titans. Ricky says, don't throw a falling down backwards pick to lose.
Please don't do that. Yeah, please don't do that.
Oh, man, that would be like a dagger.
Oh, man.
But you know what? If you look at his tape in Miami, he had a couple of those that he completed, right? So it's in his DNA
to do something, but you just hope that.
That so we have to hope that he's matured
out of that.
Or, you know, there are some guys who are like, no, and he gets away with it. Yeah. You're like, okay, the more you get away with, like Mahomes.
Yeah.
The first time, I'm sure Andy Reid watched Mahomes do some of these sidearm throws or running one way, throwing back the other, mm-hmm. things that you're taught not to do. I'm sure Andy Reid for a while was like nodding his head going, should we tell him not to do that? But after a while, it's like it worked in a game, and then it worked again in another game. And then you kept waiting for it to show up. So Andy Reid was like, okay, just let him do it.
615-737-1025. What would you consider a successful NFL debut for Cam Ward? What is your barometer for success? It can be tangible, intangible. That's what the beauty of this question is. 615-737-1025. We will get back to your reaction. But coming up next, Mitch Light from The Athletic will join us as we look ahead to week 2 of college football. Mitch will help us break it all down. That's coming up next, 615-737-1025. Hey, tomorrow, the three of us will be live at Chiba Hut in Donelson from 3 to 6, leading up to Chiba Hut's Big Jeep Glow Party. Do I need to get some glow sticks?
And we may have some.
Big Jeep glow party.
We're going to glow up tomorrow?
Oh, glow
Friday
up.
Friday afternoon? Y'all going to have a glow up?
I need a glow up. There will be live music, drink specials, and more. Check out thegamenashville.com/events for more details.
If you look at it a certain way, our three heads can glow in the right lighting.
That is true. David, take us to break. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Fink, 102.5 The Game. The Vanderbilt Commodores travel to Blacksburg to take on Virginia Tech this Saturday. Pregame is at 5 and kickoff is at 6:30. Vanderbilt football brought to you by Gary Force Acura and Smoky Mountain Tops. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by The Athletic's Mitch Light to help us break down week two of the college football season. And Mitch, let's stick with that game I just promoted, Vanderbilt at Virginia Tech. I heard Robbie Stanley say this morning on Robbie and Rex Road, and I couldn't agree more, and I want your opinion on it as well. I feel like this game for Vanderbilt is a huge swing game for the Commodores this season. It's a revenge game for Virginia Tech, but with a tough SEC schedule about to start, Vanderbilt plays South Carolina on the road next week. I feel like the trajectory of Vanderbilt's season hinges on the outcome of this game. What do you think?
Wow, that's bold. Well, actually, not really bold. It's putting a lot of emphasis on one game, but I don't disagree. I just think it's going to be very interesting to see how they play, how they look in a difficult road environment. And we can talk in a minute about how good Virginia Tech is. But if you go out and you win this game, it kind of maybe you reassess externally. I know they have their own internal goals, but those of us that look and count wins and losses, you might reassess what you think this team can do. If they lose this game to a good but hardly great Virginia Tech team, you start looking at the schedule and you say, okay, can you get to 6 wins? Can you get back to a bowl game? So obviously winning or losing is the most important, but I'm also very interested to see how they look on this in this game because, you know, we didn't learn much last week. Obviously they took care of business, which they haven't always really done against inferior opponents, but we'll learn a lot more this week.
The game of the weekend. Number 15, Michigan at number 18, Oklahoma. I believe College Game Day will be in Norman. It's an intriguing quarterback battle, Bryce Underwood versus John Mateer. What does each quarterback need to do to win that game?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more pressure on Oklahoma in Mateer. He's kind of seen as the savior, him and, you know, bringing him and Ben Arbuckle, the offensive coordinator from Washington State, and kind of to save Brent Venables' job. Mateer had good numbers. In there, I think they played Illinois State. He's a really good dual threat guy, as we know. I didn't watch much of the game, but just from reading and looking at the stats, they didn't run the ball great, and that's kind of a problem. Michigan's, you know, traditionally a very good defensive team. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Mateer and that entire Oklahoma offense to look the part. I think for Michigan, it's, you know, not house money. This team has big goals, but they're kind of clawing their way back to where they want to be after a dismal offensive season. And we saw a lot of good things from Bryce Underwood last week, the freshman, but this is an entirely different animal going on the road. First road start, we, you know, not exactly comparable, but we saw what happened to Arch Manning in his first road start last week. You know, Brent, for all of his struggles as a head coach, Brent Venables, very good defensive coach. You know, they're going to do a lot of things to try and make life difficult for Underwood. And I think the big thing, as good as Underwood might be, I just don't know how good their weapons are, and that's kind of been the problem at Michigan the last couple of years. Even when they've been really good, they just haven't had that difference maker at wide receiver, so that can make put even more pressure on him in the offense, you know, the running game if they don't really threaten you on the outside.
We're talking with Mitch Light of The Athletic discussing college football, and particularly the SEC. Now, Mitch, there's not many, you know, marquee games this week, especially not in the SEC, and Adam brought up the one that would be the most interesting. But I'm looking at Texas and San Jose State. What can Arch Manning do to sort of to change the narrative of you know, his first game? And I know people expect him to go and beat the pants off of San Jose State and for him to have a good game. Does he just need to have a good game, or does it need to be more?
I don't think he's going to can change any narratives until they enter the, you know, early next month. They go to Florida and then they play Oklahoma and Red River. I think he obviously needs to play well. They play San Jose State, who lost at home to Central Michigan. They play UTEP, one of the worst FBS teams in the Sam Houston State after that. So he needs to play well, because if he doesn't, if he struggles, and I don't think he will. He played well last year against inferior opponents. So I just think they need to kind of go out and take care of business. I'm sure they're not going to ask him to do a ton in these next few games. And just kind of, this corner, you're like, you just return to his roots, have some fun, win some games, because there's going to be a ton, especially if Florida gets off to a good start in this first month. That game, that trip to Gainesville on October 4th, it's not going to be as hyped as the trip to Ohio State, but there's going to be similar talk about Arch Manning because the pressure will be on him to play well in that game.
Now, from what you've seen this past week with college football, Lenore Sellers had a wonderful game, obviously Nussmeier as well. Which one of these quarterbacks do you think has proven to be, at least in week one, the best quarterback in the SEC?
They're different guys. Mm-hmm. I would take Nussmeier. I think Nussmeier is really, really good. Difficult environment, shook off not a great first half. I just think he's fantastic. They've upgraded at wide receiver. I know they're both considered good NFL prospects. Mm-hmm. Sellers can beat you so many different ways. That first quarter touchdown run was great. I think a lot of teams like to kind of challenge him to stay in the pocket and make those big third down throws across the middle. Nussmeier, there's no questioning his ability to make those throws, but it's a good year for quarterbacks in the SEC. Derek and I think those are, right now, the two best guys.
We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, setting up the weekend in college football. So, Mitch, you alluded to it earlier. Let's look at the Vanderbilt-Virginia Tech matchup. Last year, it was really a classic game, and I was I was thrilled at the time that Vanderbilt won based on what the previous product looked like the year before. I wasn't sure what to expect, and then by the end of the game, Clark Lee was thrilled that they won, but he was like, we shouldn't have let them back in the game. Like, Vanderbilt, if you recall, was winning the game handily. Virginia Tech made a great comeback and took the lead. Vanderbilt pulled it out. So now let's fast forward to today. What's the matchup look like?
Yeah, different teams because, the portal, as we know. But if you watched Virginia Tech on Saturday, or Sunday, I think it was, I thought, despite the loss, whatever it was, the scores ended up one-sided, I thought defensively they looked good. I thought they were very athletic on defense, and I think that's for Vanderbilt. The matchup you've got to worry about is because for all Vanderbilt did well in the Charleston Southern game, they had some protection issues. At the end of the first half, they had several holding calls, and, Clark Lee kind of shook it off, and maybe his concentration issues, all that. But whatever it was, they did – if you have trouble blocking Charleston Southern, you're going to have trouble blocking Virginia Tech. The key – for Virginia Tech is they beat themselves. And that's been Brent Pry during his tenure. Everyone's made the record like 1-11 in close games. And, sometimes you look at that and you think it's fluky, but if you've seen Virginia Tech, they just do dumb things. If you remember in the Vanderbilt game last year, they forced a punt and forced Vanderbilt to punt like 4th-and-10 from midfieldish. Well, they had two guys at the same jersey number on the punt team. Vanderbilt moves up 5 yards. Brock Taylor kicks a long field goal. That makes a difference in a game that goes to overtime. On Saturday at one point, or Sunday, they forced a punt. They had they lined up incorrectly. Or they punted. They lined up incorrectly. South Carolina made them punt again. South Carolina returns it for a touchdown. Those things keep happening to Virginia Tech. And Kyron Drones, the quarterback, for all how exciting he is and some of the good things he does, he's like a fifth-year guy, and he still makes dumb throws. I don't know if you guys watched that game, but he threw into like triple coverage in the end zone. So like Vanderbilt needs this is obvious, but limit its mistakes and kind of hope Virginia Tech shoots itself in the foot and makes the mistakes. Getting off to a good start would be key. It's a night game at Lane Stadium. It's sold out. They're going to be hyped, but it's also a fan base that doesn't really like its coach. And if they get off to a bad start, there's going to be some nervous energy in that stadium. And I think Vanderbilt can maybe play that to its favor. But it's an interesting matchup. Tech's favored by, last I saw, was just 1 point, which kind of tells you that the odds makers think Vanderbilt's the better team. Typically 2.5-3 points for the home team. So really intriguing Saturday night game.
Do you think, based on what I asked you last week, when you saw it, and as you mentioned, it's hard to gauge against Charleston Southern. They just didn't bring anything to the table. But do you think that Vanderbilt addressed their speed on the outside with Trey Richardson, who made some really eye-popping plays, albeit against low competition, and a couple other guys that they've brought in there with the usual guys that they've brought back, like Stowers and Cedric Alexander and, of course, Pavia?
Yeah, clearly. Richard, you mentioned Richardson had some nice plays. And one thing the receiving corps did, too, I think they made some nice catches, like on balls that maybe weren't perfectly thrown. Diego Pavia obviously had a good game, but I thought his receivers did a good job there. And one of the other guys was Caleb Barnett, who scored that first touchdown. He's a freshman. He's really small. He needs to add some bulk before he can kind of be a regular contributor. But as you saw with that one play, I think they're going to have certain packages in there to take advantage of his speed. So, yes, I do think Vanderbilt definitely addressed its speed. We'll find out, obviously, a lot more in the coming weeks. But through one game, I think they passed that test.
Intriguing league matchup here, Ole Miss at Kentucky. Kentucky, they've got sort of an underrated fan base. I think they'll have a good hostile environment. It's a 2:30 game. They beat them last year against Ole Miss. Really good test, I think, for Ole Miss and some of the new guys that they've got in the key positions.
Yeah, it's Kentucky struggled offensively in their opener. I think it was 24-16 over Toledo. And that's not a bad win. Toledo's the preseason favorite in the MAC. They've got a good offensive team, so that's a good defensive performance. But, Zach Calzada, who is in his sixth or seventh year, has been at Texas A&M, Auburn, Incarnate Word, and now Kentucky. He was 10 of 23 for 85 yards, averaged 3.7 yards per attempt. That is not very good if you guys follow football. And Kentucky got hit hard in the portal. Wide receiver losing Berrian Brown to LSU and Dane Keyes to Nebraska. So they needed some new playmakers there. So I'm really concerned about this Kentucky offense. We didn't learn anything about Ole Miss. They beat an inferior opponent last week. I would expect Ole Miss to go there and win this game. Their new quarterback, Austin Simmons, I don't know if you guys read much about him, really interesting case. He reclassified by 2 years. He was originally a class of 2025 kid who was committed to Florida, jumped up 2 years. He was homeschooled to the class of 23. He sat behind Jackson Dart the last 2 years, and they love him there. Had a good week last week, so I'm interested to see what he can do against a pretty good Kentucky defense.
All right, so Mitch, I think Adam will enjoy this question as a North Carolina hater. Indeed.
I saw some negative stuff towards North Carolina on Twitter from Adam. I thought that was very mean-spirited.
Yes. But,
Mitch, I just want you to know before Willie asks you this question. Where I was born, you learn your ABCs. Anybody but Carolina.
I'm aware.
Just telling you. I mean,
it's okay. Clear as day how Adam feels about this. But everybody on the athletic staff and everybody else had to be shocked at just how poorly they played. So, are they that bad or? Like, tell me what you think. Where do they go from here?
Well, you know what Bill Parcells says. You are what your record says you are. They're not good. And we did a story. This was before the spring portal window opened. But we did a story in the winter, like, North Carolina has 30 new transfers. Are they any good? And talked to different personnel people around the country. And basically the verdict was not really. They did not, they got a lot of new players, but not a lot of starters at Power Four schools. And I think that was pretty clear. They did not play well. I don't know, the moment got to them once they got behind. They quit or anything like that. They weren't that bad, but I thought TCU would win the game. Gio Lopez is a good quarterback. I've seen a lot of stuff this week talked about how they didn't really play to his strengths. They went under center a lot. He never did that at South Alabama, which is, kind of interesting. You want to play to your quarterback strengths there. So they go to Charlotte this week, and Charlotte lost badly to App State, for the sake of morale or whatever you want to say around that program, they better play well. I think they're still 20-point favorites there. But to answer your question, Willie, shocked they got beat that bad, not surprised at all they lost.
Mitch Light of The Athletic has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, breaking down week two of the college football season. Mitch, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll catch up next week.
All right, guys. Have a good week. See ya.
615-737-1025. We will get back into the Titans again. The question we are asking you throughout the program, what would you consider a successful NFL debut for Cam Ward? Which benchmarks? Which statistical benchmarks? Vibes? Whatever it is. What would you consider a successful NFL debut for Cam Ward? 615-737-1025. But coming up next, we have our eighth of 10 critical Titans questions. The eighth question does involve Cam Ward, and we will get to that next. 615-737-1025. If you are out watching the NFL games this Sunday, come on out to Twin Peaks in Madison, where Big Joe and Chris Sanders will be hosting the game's pregame show from 1 to 3 p.m. prior to the Titans season opener against the Broncos. The pregame show is brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Old National Bank, Circa Sportsbook Kentucky, and Tennessee Brew Works.